the Canadian Bitcoiners podcast is just two guys and maybe a guest or two discussing Bitcoin, Bitcoin equities, and the related macroeconomic space. It's not meant to be financial advice, so please, if you're doing any investing after listening to our program, do your own research, do your own due diligence, and understand that any money you invest can be lost. The show is meant for entertainment purposes only, and we hope you enjoy the program.
Friends and enemies, welcome to another episode of the Canadian Bitcoiners podcast. Len, I'm going to be flying this one solo for today. Joey has a personal appointment that he couldn't break it and he had to attend it. So for better or for worse, you're stuck with me. Hope it's going to be a good one. It should be a good one because I'm going to have some help to fly this bird. So I'm not going to be doing this one solo, which is really good. But before we go any further, let's do the formalities. Number one, we're sponsored by the mighty ShakePay. There's the hat. And it's the best place to buy and, of course, never sell your Bitcoin. And if you use our promo code below, you will be able to get $30 added to your account if you buy $100 worth of Bitcoin or that altcoin that's being listed and sold on ShakePay. Not only that, you could shake your phone after you use our referral code. And by doing so, you get free Satoshis. It's a faucet. You know, there's not many of these that still exist in the world today. So you might as well take advantage of it. Use our promo code and get some Satoshis. Do it for 200 straight days. And as long as you don't have a break in it. So 200 consecutive days, it's going to be 1,000 Satoshis that's going to be added to your account every time after the 200th day. So keep it up and you'll be doing 1,000 Satoshis a day. And last but not least, you have the ShakePay Visa card. So you could use your ShakePay card to buy everyday items like gas, groceries, whatever it is you need, even marijuana, whatever the heck you have to buy, you're good to go with it. And you get 1% sent back to you in Bitcoin. And also there's a ShakePay promotion ongoing. So you get the whole thing returned back to you in Bitcoin. So there's no better place to get into Bitcoin. Secondly, we have a second sponsor, Ledin. And if you use our referral code below, fund your account with 150,000 sats or with 75 USDC, you will be gifted 10 USDC if you have your money on their platform for 15 calendar days. So 15 consecutive calendar days, you could get the that reward. Also, if you bought a bunch of Bitcoin from ShakePay, what are you going to do with it? Well, you could also borrow against it with Ledin, and there's a 50% loan to value ratio. So you could do whatever you want with that money, expand your house, buy a car, repair your car, fill your car with gas. There's so many different options here. So you don't have to sell your Bitcoin. Ledin is there to help you out just to you could loan against it. So that's not too bad. And they also have the B2X going on. So if you're feeling lucky and you want to double up your stack, you could double it up with the B2X. So if you think Bitcoin's going up, use that. Pull out when you're ready. Always pull out and you're good to go and you'll be way ahead of the game. And last, there's also the mortgage, Bitcoin-backed mortgages from Ledin. So with the formalities now out of the way, let's bring him in, the man of the hour, the tower of power. It's too sweet to be sour. Oded from Ocean Falls Blockchain. How are you, Oded?
Hey, I'm doing great, Len. Living the dream.
Yeah, so it's you're also a heck of a hockey player, too. So I've I have a scouting report right here on you. Yeah, so let's take a look at this. That's actually really good. Wheels like coffee, hands like Lemieux, vision like Gretzky, and elbows like Gordie Howe. Not too bad. So you're quite the hockey player. It's like a power play every time you go on the ice. So
I think that was probably written my mom, although she's passed away, but probably my mother wrote that. Not that she knows anything about hockey.
You could have schooled her if she was like, too bad. It's right. So a good thing that you're on our team because I wouldn't want to be against you given the skill set you have. So it's been a little while since you've been here.
Yeah.
Why don't you give us an update? What's going on with Ocean Falls since we last spoke?
Yeah, so I think the last time I was here was probably in the dead of winter. Ocean Falls, we've made some tremendous progress. Even then, it's been a slow, arduous, painful process on the listing time. And this is no one's fault. This is the reality of the regulators, the reality of the entire process. But we're knocking on the door right now. We're cautiously optimistic that in the coming weeks, we will be listed. So that's on the regulatory side. It's tough. I mean, auditors fighting with regulators, making sure you're dotting the I's, getting the lawyers involved in all of it. It's quite a party, Len, you can imagine. So that's been tough. But on the business end, Ocean Falls continues to make great progress. Our facility in Ocean Falls is mining. We've had some conversations with our landlord and our power provider, who is Borlex, about looking to expand the facility there in the coming terms. I don't know if last time I was here, we'd actually signed an exclusive LOI with another location on the island, on a place called Gold River. And we're working through that process. We expect in the near future to actually have a definitive agreement on the power and the land side and renting the land. And that location over time can grow to over 80 megawatts. It's an outdoor location. We're really excited. Everything's renewable energy with us. That's important. We all want to do good, but we want to do well, but we want to do good as much as possible. And we've looked at a bunch of other locations. I'm pretty excited about our other vertical, which I know is really not mining, but is our insurance blockchain application. And our first prototype is the Eagle One, hole-in-one golf insurance. And that's we should start generating revenues this month. That's ready to go. We've got our first golf courses that are ready to sign up. And just the other day, we press released that we've got a whitelisting for people to use their crypto in form of a reserve. I don't know how much you know about insurance, but in any insurance platform, there's a requirement for a reserve in case there's a run on the platform. And then now people can actually put your crypto there, generate a very safe rate of return. We're getting into the DeFi space. I mean, that's really what part of this is. So lots going on. I mean, we're going to be digitally twinning our minds as well for all our clients. We announced that a little while ago. And we've got lots of other things going on. It's really quite exciting. I mean, once we list and get out there, we're going to continue to expand, the blockchain side. And we've got some feelers out for other locations across Western Canada and North America.
That's a lot. We're going to touch upon just about everything you said over there. And the letter of intent, that's with West Coast Marine Terminals. Is that
correct? That's perfect. Correct. Yeah. That's the group. They're the landowners. They're phenomenal people. They've actually, I mean, without disclosing how much, but they've got skin in the game. They invested in Ocean Falls back in November. We're thrilled to have them as partners. I mean, they're going to be our power provider. And we're going to rent land for them. West Coast Marine Terminals, a shout out to Kent out there for all the work he's done in helping us navigate with BC Hydro.
So we actually, it looks like we have one person here today that may be living near. Chooch says, I live near there. So that's pretty cool. I'm not sure how populated it is. So it could just be like just a rare coincidence. But I just want to double back because there's lots I want to talk about today. And if we can share with you what you can about the IPO process. I don't want you to spill the beans on stuff you can't, but what is the, like, how is the process done? Like, what do you have to do? What is the process? And I'm just curious, like, how it's all done, because as a pleb like me that sits in front of a wall with a bunch of hats, I don't have to do anything like this. And there's nothing, anything close that I do. So I'm curious, like, what is the process? If you could run the bias and maybe give us an idea how difficult it is.
First of all, without getting into too much technical detail, I mean, when companies go public, particularly in Canada, there's a couple of different ways to do it. One is what's called the initial public offering, which is, again, they go through the process, they file a prospectus, they engage with an investment banking firm, and then they look to list, and concurrently with their listing process, they are raising capital for the business to continue because they require, all businesses require capital, but they're doing it in time. That's the IPO process that we've heard about, very familiar about. In Canada, with a lot of small companies, there's something called an RTO, which is a reverse takeover, where existing companies such as an Ocean Falls may go out and negotiate with a shell. That's a corporation that already exists. And they would be vended into into that shell. I mean, there's advantages and disadvantages. That can be a little bit quicker through the process. We've taken a third approach, and it's rather unique. It's not used that often, but it's also out there, which is just called a direct listing. And that direct listing really means that the company has raised sufficient capital, or in our case, it's a little bit unique. We're actually, as a very small company, we're generating cash flow through our hosting operations and our own machines that are mining. So we don't require capital as we list. We have, enough capital in our business to be what's called a going concern for a reasonable period of time. The regulators like to see a year, year and a half. Now, if we take on new initiatives over time, we may in fact raise capital, and it doesn't preclude us once we're public to do that. So all these things, take time. Given what's happened, COVID is tough. I mean, people are working from home, regulators are working from home, lawyers are working from home. We've had unfortunate situations over the last year where, again, our lawyers were sick for a week and a half. The offices are shut down. All the things you can imagine. I mean, the bullshit that goes with it, pardon my language. And it's no one's fault. I mean, it's frustrating. The other thing that's gone on over the last year is, quite candidly, the markets have been good for a variety of different sectors. So the regulators are swamped and you go through that. So in our situation, we submitted what's called the preliminary prospectus. And the normal course, your prospectus is really your business plan. And it was called, in this case, a non-offering prospectus, which meant we didn't require money along with it. And a normal process is you submit that, the regulators accept it, and then they go, they'll ask you questions about it. I mean, you know, A, B, and C, you answer back. And it's just going back and forth with them over time. And they had some legitimate questions. We clarified that. We answered that. We believe we've answered all their questions now. Mm-hmm. We've gone back. It's a normal course to go two or three times. And like I said before, I joke, I like football too. We're on the 2-yard line. We're ready to bang it in. And we're not going to pull a Seattle Seahawks throw a slant pattern, you know, over the middle. We're just going to run over the goal line.
Stopped at the one. And what a shame, especially of all the games for that to happen. The question actually from Romel, I'll just touch upon that in a minute. So this IPO process, from what I understand, this has been going on for a long time. I mean, I say a long time, it's since last year. And I think that's how you and I, or our show and you, ended up crossing paths, as we were reporting on that. And then you saw that, and sure enough, you came on a show to discuss it. And in terms of the IPO process and having it done, does that give you a huge advantage once it's completed to actually raise capital much easier? Is that one of the main advantages of going public?
Well, I think there's a number of advantages to going public, and there's a number of disadvantages to being public. One of the advantages, the main advantages, is liquidity. I mean, it offers investors who have, you know, and we've had some investors in our company who've been very patient and very supportive over 4.5 years. So it gives investors, obviously, on the stock market, the opportunity to freely exchange their stock, and there's that transparency. The other advantage is, and I apologize, I didn't catch the woman's name who said it, but it's a very good point. Once you're a public company, there is obviously, you know, there's going to be, you know, there's full transparency. People see your financial statements, you publish them. So in fact, it is often easier, if not easier, definitely more opportunities to raise either debt or equity, you know, in the public markets. Being private, statements are not often audited, financials are not audited, so it does create that opportunity. The disadvantages for companies, it's expensive, it's tedious. I mean, there's all the things that go with that, and that's important. I mean, so because we have to dot the I's, cross the T's, make sure financials are supported, you know, are provided to everybody all in a timely manner. And sometimes you see companies that are unfortunately halted because they aren't able to get their audited statements in time, and that never looks good. So, yeah, it does create liquidity. It creates opportunities. We do believe it's going to bring our company to a larger audience over time and actually create that opportunity to raise capital and or debt when we need it.
So I got a two-parter here. The first one is really quick. Which exchange are you trying to get listed on? And the second part to that question is, since we're kind of in like a pseudo bear market right now, does this cause any sort of added complications for you, or even the fact we have volatility, does Bitcoin's volatility also add any complications for you as well, completing the IPO process?
So the first question is, we will hopefully, once we're done, we will be listing on the Canadian Securities Exchange, the CSE. So that's a very easy one. To answer your question, look, it isn't an easy market right now. There's no doubt about that. I feel very fortunate that we're in an industry that is just in its infancy. And that's why you guys are, I'm sure your audience is growing all the time. And that's why we're in it. Whether it's Bitcoin mining or crypto, digital asset mining, or whether it's blockchain applications, we know we're just in the infancy, you know, of all the things that will go from all this. I mean, we've talked in the past, whether it's, again, mining, blockchain applications, NFT, metaverse, all these areas are only going to grow. And it's really quite exciting. You know, as I said, I've been immersed in it for about the last 3 or 4 years, and you learn every day. So it does create some uncertainty, but by the same token, I think it creates lots and lots of opportunities for those companies that are real. And again, over time, I truly believe, you know, if you execute on your game plan, and we're going to be held accountable because we're going to be in the public markets, if we execute on our game plan, we'll be rewarded with that. And, you know, companies grow, companies do well because they execute, they generate revenue and have profit. One last thing I will say, given that we are going to be a small company, relatively speaking, with a market cap somewhere between $30 and $50 million, that is small. And you're subject to the volatility of that. And again, we know, and I've seen it with great companies, you know, the price of Bitcoin goes up 3,000, the stock's up. The price of Bitcoin drops 1,500, the stock's down. Is it related? Yeah, we hodl coins, we do mine. But again, I've been in the capital markets for 25 years, and you know, you try to not focus on the day-to-day and really look at your vision, you know, 1, 3, and 5 years out.
Yeah, it's a unique industry, Bitcoin mining it is, because it's there's nothing really that I could compare it to that's already out there. So it's very unique, especially how capital is raised and the mechanisms they do. It's very different. So, but I just want to transition into the power that you have access to. So right now you're getting access to the local. Is it a dam? Is it a dam that's powering a hydroelectric generator?
Yeah.
So are there others? Oh, sorry.
No, go ahead, please.
I was going to ask, are there other stranded sources of energy like this in BC that are unused, or have they all been taken up by Bitcoin miners? Because I do know that typically you're looking for something that's already existing, like paper mills that may have shut down. So the infrastructure may be there, but it's being underutilized. I'm wondering, in BC, have they all been taken up? Have they all been earmarked for Bitcoin mining, or are there still pockets left that we could take advantage of and start Bitcoin mining with some of these underutilized power sources?
Well, I think there definitely are some. I mean, with them, I mean, each situation in each location is unique. And you might have what's called, and you may be for run of river power sources. And what that means is the power supply will fluctuate with the flow from the river source, you know, and so you'll get a lot more in the spring and less in the late summer. So that is not necessarily ideal, as we know, for mining operations, because everybody requires 24/7. To answer your question directly, we don't believe we've looked. There are sources of power in British Columbia, you know, that are available. Just they may at any given time be the right economics, you know, for a company to take it over. They may require additional CapEx. It may be some situations, whether it's off-grid. I mean, our location with West Coast Marine Terminal is actually on-grid. We're working with, you know, our partners, as well as BC Hydro, to get that. And, you know, sometimes there are challenges, BC Hydro expanding, you know, the facilities and making sure all the lines and the cables are up to speed. So long-winded answer, there are opportunities out there. You have to look long and hard. And there's other opportunities, again, in Alberta, in the flare gas area. We're not looking at natural gas. I mean, but flare gas, it is wasted gas. And, you know, it's really important, you know, that if you're getting in that you team up with the right partners, being, you know, the landowners, the people, the First Nations, and the Native bands are very, very important. We know at times they've been disrespected from a variety of different reasons. We've heard it all and seen it all before. We're looking to work, we've had some informal, and now we're looking to start through some formal relationships with these groups, because they should be included, and it's important. Again, there's historical land that belongs to them. And again, for the most part, they want to be partners, which is great. That's what we want. You know, we're looking to do that. So yeah, there are opportunities out there. And then there are greenfield projects. Pardon me. I mean, I'm rambling on, but there's greenfield projects, which is, again, that requires a lot more capital. But again, it's part of the infrastructure build. And again, those are very, very interesting. You just have to identify them, work through the entire process, and it takes time.
And I didn't even think about Indigenous folk that there's an opportunity to form a partnership with them, because, yeah, if we're utilizing their lands, there's a treaty that stipulates that this land belongs to this particular group of people. Yeah, like, it makes sense that there's going to be partnerships that may form over time, and it's going to be beneficial to all parties. So it's something I just never thought about. So thank you for bringing that up. I do want to talk about your letter of intent that you signed with West Coast Marine Terminals. From what I understand, currently you're mining at about, I think you're drawing 2 megawatts power from your facility, and this West Coast Marine Terminal facility could be up to 80 megawatts. Is that correct?
That's correct.
That's a massive jump if you're able to draw all that power. Do you know what's the process here? Are you going to start moving Bitcoin miners there in the next little while? Like, what's the schedule like moving forward with this? Because this looks like a very exciting project.
It really is. I mean, and as I said, the landowners are tremendous partners on it, West Coast Marine Terminals. It's a process. So in this particular case, we've invested some capital in what's called the system impact study, which is really important just to determine, you know, what the substation can hold, the transformer, are these things up to speed? So this project will, again, I think it'll accelerate over time, but again, BC Hydro is doing its due diligence to make sure the cabling, and it hasn't been used in some time. The power there has been dormant for a while. So you can imagine there's a refresh. There's all the things. We're going to have to spend some capital there. We've already done a detailed analysis. But we, within a year, we're not sure the exact. Again, we should know that. I'm probably about 2 weeks early coming on here, Len. We're going to get some information from BC Hydro. We expect in the next 10 to 14 days the timing. But we really believe that within the next 24 to 30 months, we'll probably have north of 30 megawatts there. Wow. And then the remaining 50 will occur. We will start all the studies, all the work concurrently with our build out there. And again, it's hard. I don't want to put a time period on, but sure. I'm reasonably comfortable. And again, please don't hold me to this, that within 3 to 4 years, somewhere in that range, we will be at that 80 megawatts at that location.
I see a time frame that you may be at 3.38 exahash by 2024. I'm not sure if this is. I got this number before, and I can't find it. Well, the location where I poached it earlier, so it's hard to say if this is legitimate or not. But also, I see that as a whole, your company, if you do the breakdown, I see it's 70% is focused on operations of blockchain applications such as the Surety Block and what you were talking about, Eagle One. And 25% is for Bitcoin mining and 5% is other. Is that breakdown accurate? Did I get it correct? Or is that?
Yeah, like I don't know if I would say to you right now, the revenue stream is almost exclusively from our mining operations. Our Surety Block is really going to be up and running just now. The reason, again, and I can't recall if we use that 70-30. I don't know where that particular number came from.
I may have came this out of the blue, so don't hold me to this one.
Okay, yeah. So, yeah, the exahash number, again, is something that we were pushing for, again, by Q4, early Q1, 2025. And that's right in that time period, I think, that we were cautiously optimistic. What we've seen, just on that note very quickly, is the plan is there just as here. I'm going to say two words that everybody's heard: supply chain issues.
Yes.
You know, we know that this is, again, inflation, all the challenges that are coming with it. And that's what's delaying some of our, you know, incorporation and the buildup. But it's coming. I mean, as I said, I think as we start to move forward, the project will accelerate. To go back to it, as I said, right now, our operation, or really most of our operations, are mining. What we believe is, whether it's with Eagle One and all the blockchain applications that will start to come from that over time, they will generate, you know, a tremendous amount of revenue. Again, it really just depends how quickly we scale up on the mining and how quickly we scale up on the application side. That's why we're quite excited about, again, having two verticals. We're unique out there. We're not just miners. We really are, you know, a blockchain company. And again, I've mentioned his name before, my partner, Kevin Day, who's our chief technology officer. He's the one who got me into this, and he's explained it. I do believe mining and proof of work is here for the foreseeable future. It's an important component of everything. I believe being renewable energy is so important. But over time, it's going to be a utility. As Bitcoin, you know, and as crypto matures, we've already seen it. We may now be in a crypto winter and it's dropped 50%, but we know the last drop was 85%. The one before that was 95%. And as this industry continues to grow, as crypto continues to grow out there, you'll see less fluctuation. And as a result, mining will be profitable. It probably won't be as profitable, and then it won't have times where it's really dark and difficult like we experienced in 2020.
We had some really difficult times. Even 2018 was a really, really down time because we had 3K, and that was after we hit a high of around 19-20K just about 13 months earlier than that. But I'm curious your thoughts about proof of work, and there seems to be a concerted effort to attack it, given what's the narrative coming out of the EU. You hear rumblings today from the IMF. They're not too happy with proof of work. What's your thoughts with this? Do you think that proof of work is something that is going to be continually be attacked by these governments, or do you think eventually they will adopt it and potentially even start mining it, because there seems to be an opportunity for these countries out there to start mining Bitcoin. Just, what are your thoughts on this?
So first of all, thank you for the PTSD now, but reminding me it was 2018.
Sorry about that.
yeah, that was tough times. But to your point, it's hard to, again, we're in such a unique industry and it's so new. I mean, hard to fathom what's going to happen 10 or 15 years down the road. I do believe, though, what you're going to see is a greater and greater push on the renewable energy, and again, again, you saw what happened in New York State just the other day on their legislation. We've been speaking to, potential strategic partners, either bringing their machines or supporting our growth and expansion through capital influx in Europe. And you're definitely going to see, a push towards, again, proof of stake. As I said, I just don't think proof of work is going away in the foreseeable future. It might become less and less, of the overall when we get it, process when we get into things. Bitcoin over time may be antiquated. And the reason I say that, we know it was the first initial proof, of the blockchain. I've said it for a number of years now. I believe that Bitcoin is crypto gold. It is an asset class. Yes, there is the ability to exchange and to use it as a currency. But I think over time, it will be comparable to gold, because it allows people to hold that asset, to exchange it a little more easily. So therefore I see that's where proof of work is going to go. I think proof of stake is going to continue to expand and grow as we get into other areas. But I don't see proof of work going away in the foreseeable future, because I see more and more legislation coming in allowing it, but perhaps restricting it to that renewable energy space.
Do you heard of any rumblings out in BC potentially of trying to put a stop to more proof of work projects, more Bitcoin miners being set up in the province of BC? Has there been any sort of talk like that, or have they just been quiet on this topic altogether?
It's been quiet. I mean, let's hope it stays that way. I think what you're seeing, that Canada is going to be an opportunity because we've got so much hydroelectric power. That opportunity, for mining to come here. And I think if it's done, and I say responsibly, what I mean by responsibly is what we hope to do, partnering up, whether it's with indigenous group, creating blockchain areas, contributing to the community. It's not just setting up these miners, and then running them 24/7, but really, and our hope as well is the regeneration and some of these, old dormant towns. I mean, we've got some hopes over time for Ocean Falls. I mean, potentially create, we've set it way back, an IoT lab, up there. It'd be kind of cool or some things. So it's been quiet in BC. I don't see an issue. We're looking to reinvest in the community, in the province, and create, these data centers that will allow us to do some mining. And then perhaps over time, there's other applications that can continue and grow there.
I'm curious, what type of mining equipment do you use? Is it Bitmain stuff, or is it what's miner?
So for most of our operations right now are hosting. So we are almost exclusively, although we've got a smidgen of some altcoins, almost exclusively a Bitcoin right now that we're mining. So if they're ASIC machines, S19, some M31. So, there's a lot of, from Bitmain. We're more a hoster than we've got some machines that are owned by us. I have often said that right now, as we know, there's a huge supply of machines and a lack of power. So I think that there's an opportunity for us to bring those machines in. I'm also a little bit, not nervous, but if I don't have to spend the CapEx, as a business owner, I say to myself, if I don't have to spend the CapEx on all these expensive machines, I'll look for times where it's opportunistic as well as strategic to pick some up at a good price, allow us. But we see ourselves as, again, majority 70-30, 80-20 over time hosting versus, our own machines.
Tell us a little bit about those hosting solutions that you are offering. Are you giving it to a small person like myself, like a small individual like myself that would just simply buy a rack on the wall, or are you giving it or offering it to larger consumers, larger projects out there? I'm curious. Talk a little bit more about this project.
So we're across the board right now. I mean, we see ourselves as offering, call it a white glove support service. Again, you bring in your machines. They're not our machines. They're your machines. We will plug them in. We will manage them for you. And currently, being a small operation, we've been able to allow mom and pop, I mean, smaller, individuals who hold these machines. Obviously, as we grow, it's a lot easier to have one or two clients or customers versus many, many clients. But again, we're still a proud Canadian company. And even at the number, I can't remember, the 80 megawatts at that point, relatively speaking, we will be a boutique miner. I mean, that is not, you know, when you compare yourselves to some, you're compared to some of the other bigger mining operations around the world. I mean, we're not looking, we'd like to grow, and our expectation is we will grow the next little while, but I don't see us, it's a long ways off, at 500 megawatts, 700 megawatts. It's just tough to get that power supply out there.
Yeah, just find people to sit on bikes, start pedaling away and generate energy from that.
Well, there you go, the hamster wheel's working. Yeah, that's right.
In terms of the digital twins, I saw that on your – is that also that's going to be working in conjunction with the hosting solutions you're providing as well? And could you talk a little bit more about that digital twins?
Yeah. So, I mean, I think what we're looking to do is we will be setting up, you know, allowing the digital twinning of our clients' ASIC machines or, again, whichever particular, you know, units that they have in our facility and allow them to actually, you know, through the metaverse, I mean, that they'll be able to look and they'll be able to go in there and actually see, visually see their machines, you know, working away. So it's kind of a neat extension. I mean, everybody wants to, as opposed to like in 2D, which what we're doing right now, people can actually have the opportunity, you know, to participate in that. There'll be something else along those lines that we'll probably be announcing in the next week. You know, that's a further extension of that capability and allowing, you know, our clients to really, you know, virtually experience. And again, it's the way I look at it, it's another white glove service, allowing them to really, you know, get that. And then we're testing it at Ocean Falls as we grow and as we build it out in West Coast. Again, if Len is in Hungary or in, you know, in San Paulo, and you've got machines with us, you'll be able to go in there and actually, you know, virtually experience how they're doing.
That's pretty cool. This whole process almost reminds me a bit of Compass Mining, where you purchase through them and then they host it and they use their power, and then you could over time collect the Bitcoin that you mine through them. But we also recently saw in Russia, there was some big kerfuffle that took place over there, and Compass Mining was forced to close their operations as a result. I'm wondering, I'm not sure if we're ever going to come to a point like that here in Canada where they just arbitrarily shut off Bitcoin miners, but do you have contingency plans in place should the worst come to worst and they decide to mothball any proof of work operations and people have their miners on your system there? I'm curious if you have plans set for that.
Well, again, we don't see that happening, you know, in the foreseeable future, Len. I would say as well, the difference, as we know, between us and Russia or Venezuela or Syria is the government cannot just come in and shut things down. Again, there's a process that we work through, you know, the government legislation, et cetera. We're trying to stay ahead of that. I don't believe the Canadian government will do that. We are seeing, you know, as we said, various restrictions in North America. If anything, though, I believe that proof of work is going to continue to be an important component of blockchain and the evolution of this. You're seeing more legislation, again, which I think is a positive. It's just up until recently, you had the developers working on one path and the government working on the other path. You're seeing that intersection over time. I see more and more of the world's mining coming to North America, and I see it coming to North America because there is rule of law here. There is transparency. There is the ability, you know, for people to set up businesses responsibly. Yes, we have potentially environmental concerns that we need to address and we need to get better. And again, I believe a lot of those environmental concerns will be able to be solved through advances in technology. For example, I'm sure you guys have talked about the show on it, immersion cooling. The recycling of heat. We've already started. We've got some prototypes. We've done some things on that. The challenge with any new technology is almost always it's inefficient to begin with. It, you know, there's problems. I mean, whether it's too much heat, as we know, the giving away. But this is progress. Blockchain, you know, as we know, is going to revolutionize the world in many, many different sectors. I believe it'll make a better world for us. We have to manage it. I mean, and there's all the pitfalls that go with it and things that we're seeing pros and cons. But I don't think it behooves anybody. And again, what I love about Canada and the United States, and we've got varying levels of socialism and all the things that go with it, we do allow for innovation. And if we stop that, we do turn into Russia, and that's not what we want. I mean, we will continue to allow. And again, you've probably heard it. I mean, I always pronounce his name incorrectly. Pierre Poilievre. I mean, one of the conservative leaders. I mean, I don't think he truly understands everything about blockchain and Bitcoin, but he's talked about Canada being, you know, a leader in blockchain. I think we have that. I know that even Stephen Harper has sat on a number of advisory boards and believes in this. We're going to have some issues and challenges. I mean, and I think that that's why it's so important to stay on the renewable energy side. Reducing our carbon footprint is important. I mean, I'm the worst guy in the world about carbon footprint. The reason people tell me that is because I have 5 kids. So I'm going to leave a huge carbon footprint. But I think that, you know, again, there's a lot that we can do, and I think we all should do, you know, do more. And anyway, so I think, I hope that's a long-winded answer. I don't see this happening, that Canada's going to shut us down in the near term.
No problem with any long-winded answers. I 100% agree with you. Over here, we have political stability, and I don't think things are going to just be as drastic as a problems that you have in Russia, for instance. And I do have, I think, one last question, because I do want to get to the surety block part, because this is going to be a big part of your business moving forward. But one of the last questions I think I have from Bitcoin mining: do you have any backup power for your mining operations? I mean, specifically, do you have diesel generators? And if so, is this something that is typically common amongst Bitcoin mining operations?
Yeah, so that's a great question. I mean, we don't have it at Ocean Falls. I mean, we don't have that redundancy of power. And again, there have been, you know, at different times where the power has been shut off, you know, for short periods of time. In our particular location, I mean, Borelex has been a tremendous partner in ensuring that the power gets back on. They're also incented to continue to keep the power, because their job is to sell power. And, you know, they're servicing communities. They're servicing, again, there's a fish farm literally right next door. So it's very important for them to get the power back on. But we have had situations where, again, you know, a power line goes down and it's corrected. You know, redundancy would be great. To my knowledge, I'm sure there are some, you know, the mining operations out there that do have redundancy. Those are the larger operations. But with that, again, probably comes a higher cost to mine. I mean, it's greater infrastructure costs and all the things that go with it. I mean, to your point earlier, I often go back that a year ago in June, right about now, as we recall, when the Chinese basically tried to kick out, you know, Chinese government tried to shut down most of the mining operations. And obviously we, like many others, got a lot of calls from miners in China. And they asked me, what's your cost of power? And I said, well, it's, you know, it's around 5 cents Canadian. 5 cents Canadian? We can mine in Syria for 1 cent Canadian, or in Venezuela for 0.5 cent Canadian. I'm like, well, go to Syria or go to Venezuela. I mean, it's what you talked about earlier. There's a rule of law here. No one's going to walk into your operation, take your machines, you know, away or suddenly shut down. So anyways, that's, again, we don't have redundancy right now. And that's being off grid. I mean, as I said, Borelex would be great. When we move on grid, again, the power is even more stable because you're on the grid. I mean, working at our new location. So that'll be even more dedicated. But it's been a great relationship with Borelex. I mean, they did have a shutdown. We let our clients know earlier this spring, because they're in the third year of a fourth year upgrade to the penstocks. So next year will also be shut down for a couple weeks as well. And then for the next 40 years, we'll not be shut down at all, which is great. So
I like the long-term outlook for that. You guys are planning out for long-term. This is great. Let's transition to Surety Block. And I believe that's a subsidiary of Ocean Falls Blockchain.
Yeah, and it's one of our verticals. I mean, yeah. So again, I don't know if I tag us the lawyers if a wholly owned subsidiary, but really we've just got two verticals: our mining operation and the Surety Block.
And Eagle One is a project or a product that is a part of Surety One.
Correct, of Surety Block. That's right. It's our
first Surety Block. Sorry.
It's our first example of what we're using, you know, Surety Block and the blockchain application you know, and smart contracts.
So Surety Block, this is, from what I gather, this is going to be a very exciting and potentially lucrative opportunity for Ocean Falls blockchain. Talk a little bit about this, because I'll be perfectly honest, this is outside my wheelhouse. So, but I would imagine you're very excited about the prospects moving forward, especially with Eagle One being released this month. So go ahead, talk a little bit about that, and pump it up as much as possible.
Well, and I'll gladly do that, and I'll talk a little bit about Eagle One, but the reality is it's way over my pay scale. Like, I mean, to start talking about blockchain applications, it's taken me a couple, 3 years to learn on the mining side. We got to get my partner Kevin Day in here.
Anytime he's welcome. He's welcome.
Yeah,
anytime.
You know what? I'll let him know. I mean, and again, it's like, yeah, he's I tease him. He's the propeller head. He's got it all figured out. But let me tell you. So Surety Block again is, again, there's a number of different, you know, blockchain applications that we've been working on and that we purchased as well. Some of these applications just about a year and a half ago to vend in. Eagle One is the first one, which is again, we're utilizing captive insurance. What captive insurance is, if you can imagine, similar organizations or the same organizations bind together, and Kevin hates when I say this, but they self-insure. They're not really self-insured. They create, you know, their own corporation and insure themselves for a similar liability. So Eagle One is our first proof. And what we're doing is, in this case, we're incrementally adding blockchain applications to it. So I'll start where we're starting simply. So if you've ever played golf, and I know Joey's a golfer, I mean, so
I play Fridays, every Friday.
There you go. Okay, so every golf tournament that you've been at, there is usually a hole-in-one golf tournament, or a hole-in-one prize, excuse me. So at these hole-in-one prizes, I mean, they're usually insured, be it only a $5,000 prize or a $1 million shootout, whatever the number is. Generally speaking, the organization that's hosting the insurance has to go to a third party and get that, and they'll pay $1,500, $2,000, $5,000 to insure in case anyone gets a hole in one. The golf courses, what we've done is gone to the golf courses, and again, we've signed up some of the golf courses where they will basically offer the companies that come there or the charities or whoever is hosting this golf insurance, and in their checklist, okay, you're going to feed me, you're going to give us all everybody a bucket of balls to hit on the range, you're going to like service 144, you know, golfers who are playing 18 holes. Hey, you know what? We'll also provide you the hole-in-one insurance, you know, that you're going to give it your prize. And what stopped, and captive insurance, by the way, in the United States is a $61 billion industry in 2020. So it's a big industry. And in this case, so what we're doing is by utilizing, again, smart contracts and having crypto as the reserve, because whenever you have insurance, you need a reserve there in case there's a run, you know, on the liability. Hole-in-one is an easy one to start with because it's very simple using a smart contract. The ball went in the hole or the ball didn't go in the hole. And we're using so crypto will be able to be used as the reserve, and then it'll convert over to cash, a general letter of credit for the bank, and it goes in there. And so people will, and so by utilizing smart contracts through all this process and using a captive insurance, you're able to get something called the combined ratio. And the combined ratio is the cost of all the administrative costs of having insurance, which often runs like 90, 95% for companies, get it down to 80. You're just disintermediating things. That's really it. And as a result, the golf courses, along with us, will be owners of these things. And this is a revenue stream that allows for the golf courses to participate and generate additional revenue. That's it. We're running a more efficient hole-in-one golf course. I'm sorry if I probably bastardized. I haven't said it very, very clearly. But what's interesting about this as well is, again, if you're a golfer, Len, as am I, golf courses are struggling a little bit. We know that. I mean, the younger generation doesn't necessarily golf as much. People want to do shorter holes. By setting up initially on the insurance and the hole-in-one, we see other opportunities for them where, again, over time, when you go get your bucket of balls to hit on the range, there could perhaps be three colored balls. And again, you might get a $50 prize or a $100 prize by putting in the hole. We could use photographic technology. Did it go in? Again, smart contract, it pays out or doesn't pay out. So it's really, there's lots and lots of opportunity. Should I answer Rommel's question?
Right, yeah, now? Go ahead. It might as well. Oh,
thank you for the question. So, and it leads me to, it's a very important point. So we are licensed for this year to start. We've got a fronting company. Fortress out of Calgary. We're going to be starting only in BC, Alberta, Saskatchewan, Manitoba. By next year, we expect to be in Ontario and the rest of Canada. But if you email me at odette@oceanfalls.com, I will get back to you about this, because we do anticipate moving to the U.S. It sounds like, there's lots and lots of opportunities. And we just actually announced the other day that we're allowing people to use their crypto, to HODL in this, and they can generate an 8-10% return, basically having their crypto as that reserve and security. And people have asked, is this safe money? Well, we've had an actuarial report by Aon Dunn. I mean, this sort of insurance has been around for many, many years. And really what we're saying is, so the golf courses are going to charge this. It's going to be easy for the companies coming to do their tournaments because they don't have to go look for third-party insurance. The golf courses are going to generate a nice rate of return because they're effectively going to charge the same, maybe a little bit cheaper. It's more profitable. And again, there's an opportunity to grow from here on so many different areas. I mean, insurance is ripe for disintermediation. So we're really excited about this. We think that, again, we're starting small this year. It's perfect timing. We'll get into the rest of Canada. We look to the States, and it's a business that, again, based on our projections, could generate over $20 million worth of premiums, in 3 years and in 36 months time. And you can build on this. Beyond that, there are many other applications. For example, glass insurance, I mean, again, is another way. And the reason, again, I live in Alberta. Anybody who drives in Alberta knows in the winter, everyone's got a cracked windshield, right? I mean, it's kind of salt. It's like it's stones and rocks. And, so again, you could have, that's one example. So glass insurance. And again, because this is great. Smart contracts work where it's a black or white answer. So, either a window is cracked or it's not cracked. Theoretically, over time, you could do life insurance, with a smart contract. You're either dead or you're not dead. If you think about other areas of insurance that don't work, like disability. I mean, it's hard to tell, Len, if your back is really injured or not. I mean, there's gray areas. So over time, we see lots and lots of opportunities, in insurance. And each one of these will kind of be a different company. The captive area is great because, again, it can generate. And that's where we're starting things off initially, just allowing people to use their crypto as a reserve. And again, the first person I went to said, this is great. I mean, I'm actually going to get paid instead of hodling it. I'm going to be able to put it in a reserve. And I said, yeah. And golf is great because it's called a very short tail, meaning that, if suddenly at one tournament, four hole-in-ones happen and there's a payout, the next day you can actually adjust the premiums. I mean, you don't have to worry about a typhoon or something hitting a huge liability 15 or 20 years down the road. You're able to adjust the premiums very, very quickly. And so there's been lots of appetite. Our partners were excited about getting this thing started. And again, I think it's going to be, I often say it's not really sexy for a capital markets business, but there's a reason Warren Buffett has been investing in insurance companies, for 40, 50 years, because you get the premiums, and then he invests the money. And it's a very, very, it's a great business. And again, we're creating, again, using blockchain to help solve a problem. I mean, that's something I may have talked about my last time I was on, that my partner Kevin's always said, Oded, we've got to use blockchain where it's solving problems. Where are there issues? And again, insurance is one. People pay too much. I mean, it could be a lot more profitable. And then we'll look to get into other areas. So we're pretty excited. We're pumped about it. We're really pumped about it.
No, I could tell you're very passionate about this, but am I correct to assume that the insurance industry and the field itself, it's highly regulated? And if so, are you stepping on anybody's toes, and are there any other hurdles and anything you have to jump through in order to make your operations work within these environments?
So Len, you nailed it. Insurance, as Kevin says, is the most regulated industry out there. So absolutely. I mean, we have got, again, a fronting agent that will be our insurance. We've got insurance agents. So yes, we, for example, Ocean Falls Blockchain is not selling insurance. We're not insured. There will be people out there, all that. So we've had to jump through a number of hoops, to get to this place. Fortress is our fronting company in Calgary. They've been very creative. They love this idea. Great partners. And so it's been tough. I mean, again, actuarial reports, looking back at all the things, we've incurred a lot of costs. and to get it up and running. And yeah, insurance is highly, highly regulated.
Yeah, you don't want to double cross those people too.
I don't want to piss them off.
If they want to stand there. They want to stand their ground. But yeah, it sounds like this could be a very lucrative business for you. And if it is, it's obviously going to make Ocean Falls even more of an attractive business to invest in. And that's wonderful for you because there's lots of opportunity moving forward. I'm curious then, aside from you mentioned golf and potentially even the glass industry, like how much further out can you get into it with this type of insurance? Because I'm curious, it's almost like anything. There's no limit then, right? And no limit. So yeah. Then in that case, are you limited to just North America, or could you even go outside of the borders of North America and go to other jurisdictions?
You actually could. Now, remember again that each one of these will be a different vertical. And if you're looking at things, I can share with you things that we've had in the past. And we talked about it earlier. We want to do well, but we want to do good. And I've learned a little bit about it. And we're not sure how this will take some time to implement, but I don't know if you're familiar with the concept of microloans. Microloans are given in emerging countries, you know, to the small farmer or the small businesswoman. They're you know, $300 loans, $500 loans, you know, they're often given. Think about this in agriculture. So now all the stats show about microloans is that these people, and again, if a farmer buys one cow or you give him or her 50 kilos or pounds of grain, these people generally, I mean, 98% of the time pay it back. I mean, these are people committed to doing that business. The problem with microloans is there's insurance. There needs to be micro insurance on each one. So now let's think about the farmer who has gotten some grain and suddenly there's a drought. Okay. Now, in order for him or her to collect on their insurance on this, because they've taken it out, somebody has to come from the city out to the village, drive out there 3 hours or whatever and get that. Over time, think about using technology and weather patterns. And again, so you can determine, I mean, insurance can kick in, for example, if there has been, you know, it's plugged in through smart contracts. It hasn't rained there for 15 days. Boom, you know, there's a payout. Or again, if winds of over in excess of 100, you know, kilometers an hour, you know, went through that area, you know, people, their ability may or may not, but you know, you can determine that there should be a payout. That's where smart contracts and weather, and as you said, you can think about these things can grow into so many different areas over time. As I said, we talked about life insurance, glass insurance, you know, again, you know, wet weather, all these areas. There's lots and lots, and smart contracts right now are very simple. They're not always smart contracts, but over time that technology will grow. I mean, I haven't thought of many more. I'm not that creative, but I'm sure you're already thinking, you know, it's a black or white answer. If there's a black or white answer, you can start to employ, you know, blockchain.
So I'd be remiss if I let you go without talking about your hockey endeavors lately. Tell us what's going on lately with your hockey time, because we're getting close to the hour and I respect your time. I'm curious, have you had any more interactions with McGillney or anybody else?
No. And actually, I threw it there. That's the Tissot's jersey right behind me. I mean, it's like, so that was my last trip, and I was actually in Israel, and we got to play, again, a bunch of the Russian alumni back in November when people did talk to Russia. You know, it was like, right now, I mean, my hockey career is, I think, pretty much over. I did get invited, I'll share. This summer in Israel, there's something called the Maccabiah Games. Maccabiah Games, for lack of a better term, is the Jewish Olympics. I mean, you know, Jewish athletes from all over the world come to Israel. It's the third or fourth largest sports event in the world. There's 10,000 athletes come. I've been lucky to participate in it a couple times. I was asked to play again this year. There's an over 40 team. And I just said, no, I'm done. But I will brag that my son and my daughter are going to Israel. They're playing for Team Canada. In hockey. So there's going to be a hockey tournament in Jerusalem in the middle of July, which is really quite interesting. And I can say that, you know, it's again, there's athletes, you know, they'll be playing USA, Canada. There's a European team, not a lot of countries that are playing, but the level of play is quite good. I know, again, I was talking to my daughter on her team. There's she's one of the youngest ones on the team. She's 18, but there's a couple young women who play for Harvard, Syracuse, Queen's University, and then on my son's team, there's he's again one of the youngest. He's 19 or 20, so he's 20, but there's a bunch of kids, young men going Division One or played minor pro. So I'm going to go there and watch and sit on the beach at a different time and have a beer. But
in his early 50s, I mean, you're only what, 43, 44. You have a long way to go before you can even consider hanging it up. So yeah.
I'm happy to say, and I'm 55. I'm like, now I'm playing golf. Now, again, I broke 40 last week on the front nine, for the first time. Yeah.
Good for you. I struggled.
I'm going to the senior tour. Next time we'll start talking golf. It's a senior tour. Maybe it's that new Lift tour. If you're in England. I heard Dustin Johnson got $120 million.
It's a very lucrative field. I get 40 putts in a round, never mind shooting 40 in the front nine. So good for you. Before we wrap things up, just want to hand off to you. Where can we find you? What's your website? And just talk about whatever you want before we sign things off here.
Yeah. So again, you can find the website. We're going to be doing some upgrades to it in the next little bit, but it's oceanfalls.com, www.oceanfalls.com. If someone does want to talk to me, please email me at oded@oceanfalls.com. We're really pumped that we're going to be, public in the near term. Capital markets are capital markets. We'll see what the stock price does, but we have a really bright future. We're excited. I've got an amazing executive team. I've mentioned Kevin, but there's three or four other gentlemen on that group. I won't embarrass them by mentioning their names, but they've just done an amazing job with it. We've got, we're excited. Next time I'm on, we're going to be public, Len, and we'll talk about the next aspects of Surety Block. West Coast will be on, and, hopefully we'll have even some other initiatives that we're moving forward on.
I'm looking forward to that because this has been a few months coming for you to finally get listed. And when it does, we'll be talking about it on our show. So don't worry about that. So thank you very much, Oded. And thank you to everybody else for tuning in. And we'll be chatting again on Monday. So take care.
Say hi to Joey for me.
We'll do it.